Happy Halloween, everybody! Mwahaha! Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 39! On this episode, we finally talk about Cabin in the Woods. Yes, Cabin in the Woods, a film that is highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and anywhere else good reviews can be found. Directed by Drew Goddard and written by Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon, this film gives us plenty to talk about, and to help us talk about it, my wife and writer, Laura Fissel, joins us, and we are lucky enough to also have snagged James Harleman from Synagogue Again, someone who is well-versed in horror and reviewing movies and making Halloween way more fun than most people probably have. So with that, we get to talk about all kinds of things, from why we watch horror in the first place, kind of the Christian role in that, to the actual film where we get to talk about penal substitution, the desire to see transgressions punished, the roles that people play, and other conversations that include awesome Halloween traditions. So, without further ado, episode 39... Cabin in the Woods and Accessible Horror. Mwahaha! 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 Evil laugh! Mwahaha! Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. So, I have noticed that you guys have been traveling and vacationing, and I have enjoyed all the pictures of you with hair. so that's been really great.
My Team Jacob days.
Now, I really not to be over sentimental, but I really enjoy seeing people who've been married for longer periods of time who still just really, really are like, I feel like they're enjoying life. And I feel like you guys are enjoying life. Or at least that's the social persona that you put out there.
You're doing a good job making it look like
awesome.
You're enjoying life.
So it's always cool to see what you guys are doing.
Well, we enjoy each other, even if life is not great. You know, I think, part of the key, too. So, absolutely.
Well, one of the things another reason I was moderately excited. I'm really excited to have you on for a Halloween episode, a specific special Halloween episode, is because compared to most people, I think Halloween is more epic at the Harlem Manor probably than anywhere else. because it has special significance for you guys, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I don't know if you would be willing to just explain what you guys do for Halloween, why it's important, and maybe what you guys are going to be doing this year. Is that a secret?
No, not at all.
Okay, I didn't know if it was announced.
it was one of those things where it kind of, we certainly came from a drama background, both of us. We met in a musical, which wasn't Sweeney Todd. That's kind of sad. That would have really punctuated things.
Perfect.
It's actually Brigadoon, which, you know, I mean, I was in it, so maybe it was a horror, but I had the non-singing role, so that works for a musical. But so we always had a drama background, and so it was one of those things where we thought it would be fun to get – we were going to get married in October. We were aiming for earlier, but the hall we wanted, you're looking for a place to rent. We wound up having it on October 30th, and so then it all kind of came together. It was a confluence of events, and like, well, why don't we make the reception a masquerade? You know, so everybody has kind of the masks and sort of those things. And so that really began it, and then we love creating sort of traditions, and so it was like, well, why don't we have a themed you know, a themed party every year with something. It's, and for those who don't really like Halloween, you know, because whatever, maybe they have religious feelings about celebrating or not celebrating. So we called it, so we called our party in October Harloween. So it's Harloween. You know, just like all the churches have the harvest festivals or whatever. But
that's right.
So we decided we'd, the Harlemans would have Harloween, and every year we'd pick a theme. So I cannot probably name all 15, but I mean, we started, I think the first one we did was a Simpsons party, and everybody had to sign up as a different character. So we wound up with a pretty large, you know, like 50 different Simpsons characters. And so we sort of moved through, and they're not always that tight. Once it was like television from the 80s, once it was, so we had a lot of great 80s outfits and everything from the A-Team to, just like 70, Gilligan's Island, some other stuff. Anyway, we worked our way through a bunch of stuff. A couple of years ago, we circled back to musicals, so we did actually get to be, we had, it was basically Sweeney Todd and the Mrs. Lovett through a meat pie party, so, and most of our friends still are around, so.
Most of them.
Yeah. There was no priest on the menu, so all my pastor friends survived. But and so every year we have kind of a large dramatic party, but we always make sure it's not on the 31st because we do like we've also become sort of the beachhead of Halloween in our neighborhoods. We have a lot of decorations out. The kids come around. We make sure we give the adults apple cider and mulled wine. So we're sort of handing out candy, but also kind of really trying to have that be a moment where it's another touch point with neighbors, and they'll walk by and stop by and say how much their kids loved it. And so it, you know, it allows us to sort of reach out and talk about it. And you know, that ties in. We've always had a love for scary movies, and probably it's why The Thing, why Jaws, why a lot of the other films top my 25 list. Mm. And to be honest, you know, I've not really sat down and had a hard look at that list in the last 10 years. So sometimes I wonder if a movie, even like Cabin in the Woods, might just have earned the sweet spot, at least in the guilty pleasure list, if not on the top list, just because I think in some ways it encapsulates my favorite things about horror that I've been watching since the 80s.
So I don't think you got to it, but what was the theme for this year?
This year's theme is Star Wars. So,
and you haven't done Star Wars yet.
We had never done Star Wars. We had science fiction early on. Maybe I think it was like fourth year with science fiction. So, you know, you had a couple guys in robes saying they were Jedis, but but this is hardcore. We actually have the 501st coming out. So we'll have some represent. I don't know if you know what that is.
I don't, but I would love to know.
Those are guys who, I mean, they're sort of the hardcore costumers. I mean, like full stormtrooper outfits and the whole, you know, complex deal. They'll go around to conventions and you take pictures with them and give money. That they sort of represent charities, and so they do charity work. But they're kind of an organized. They're an organized garrison, if you will. And they won't just all be in trooper uniforms. They'll have rebels. They'll have the Twi'lek men and women with the tentacles and all. I mean, yeah, it's pretty severe. So I figured out the one Han Solo costume I could rock, which was his Hoth outfit, because, well, he has a hood and goggles on, so you don't need the hair. So
wait, so where is this at? I mean. Like how big of an event is this?
It's not. It's probably going to be around 100 people. One of our friends at Seed Church in Linwood, north of Seattle, is going to have us host that. So we'll just have it in their building. And so
that's cool.
Yeah, we'll get in there a day early and Star Wars decorated out. For pictures, we actually have a giant. Kat and some friends are constructing a giant action figure sort of backing. So people will be able to stand against it like they're an action figure kind of on one of those, you know, on the card.
Oh, that's cool.
That's really cool.
For photographs. So, yeah, that should be pretty good.
So at this point, I don't think anyone's going to want to actually, like, listen to the Cabin in the Woods thing. They just don't want to come to
they're
it.
They're all looking for tickets to Seattle.
You're going to be having, everybody's like, how expensive does it to fly to Seattle? But that sounds great. Gosh. So, and I know we'd mentioned it when we'd seen you guys and I toured the Harlem Manor. And you'd mentioned some of the past ones, and I was like, man, I don't think people realize how creative you can get with this. So, but we are going to talk about Cabin in the Woods,
sure, right?
Because we all love this movie. One of the things that I wanted to address before we really got into the Cabin in the Woods part, though, is that, so I have you on, James, and I know you love horror movies. Is there any kind of horror movie that you don't like?
You know, honestly, I'm not a big fan of, I'd say, the movies like Wrong Turn or even The Purge, where, well, I mean, The Purge had some commentary on where we were going in the future, but movies mm-hmm. that are set predominantly in present day or maybe, you know, 70s, 80s, where it's just the nutball in the woods, where there's no dimension to it other than crazed human. Mm-hmm. You know, the note, was it Vacancy or some of those? I have no love for those because it's just, then I'm just, I get people suck. I can read those in the headlines. There's plenty of, somebody's going nutty out in the woods with their AK or, you know, like, that's fine. I have no intrinsic love for those. There has to be some kind of component that takes it to another world, another level, another dimension, something unnatural or I don't care. That's I think an exception to that would be You're Next, actually. I just saw that recently. Just because it had a very unique twist, which I almost don't want to give away, but in its own way, it had a character who wasn't who you assumed they were, and there were some plot twists, so it wasn't just the nutball just out in the sticks scenario. And so it has to have something. I've seen a few that kind of, they get enough out of it to get my interest, but...
Yeah. But definitely wouldn't make, you know, your top horror movie list or...
No. And I've always been partial. I was reading the Walking Dead since issue one, long before anybody cared about a TV series. The zombie fare ever since the Romero films back, you know, watching Night of the Living Dead, it came well before I was born. Obviously, it was still fascinating to check out and loved that original trilogy. And so I've always been partial to the zombies. But that gets into some of the metaphor and things behind why I like it, I guess. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I want to come back to that too, because I know that when I put the episode up early in Real World's days, when I got to come talk to you, there you addressed kind of like why Christians can or, you know, can't watch horror films, or should or shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I wanted you to kind of readdress that a little bit since it was very topical for this episode. But I also wanted to point out that. With Cabin in the Woods, I had specifically have what I would consider a diverse group, even though there's only three of us. You know, I like some horror films. I don't like others. I don't necessarily like the horror genre. I think there are films in the horror genre that are really good films. And I feel like mostly I just like really good films. James, from my conversations with you, from my understanding of things that you've liked, like, I knew that you liked almost all kinds of horror. And then there's Laura.
And then there's me.
Yeah. So Laura, I have you on because I feel like you're on the opposite side of the spectrum from James. So mm-hmm. kind of explain where you're coming from with horror.
So you're really into the splatter films then, is what I...
Love them. I wish that I could like the horror genre because there are a lot of... Like what you were saying, James, there's a lot of interesting metaphor there. And actually, when I read Bram Stoker's Dracula, I was surprised that it quickly became one of my favorite books I've ever read, because that's not typically a place that I go. I mean, that book scared the heck out of me. But that's the thing. Like, it's not necessarily that I'm not interested in these films or that I'm disgusted by them, but they scare me. And I just can't... Sometimes I just can't handle it. Most of the time, I just can't handle it. We watched The Conjuring, I think, because of your recommendation, and we watched it, like, in the middle of the day, and I still couldn't sleep for, like, 2 days.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a good movie, and it was, like, really fascinating, and especially because it was based on a true story, and I really liked, like, getting to know, I can't even remember what their names are, but the people, like, the paranormal investigator people.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool to know about them, but so I just get scared, and so I can't watch a lot of horror films. But I love vampires. I love the idea of vampires of wanting to live forever, but needing to like take other people's life force for that, because living forever is unnatural. I love the metaphor of the zombie for going through life consuming without any, you know, any engagement. So there are things that I like about horror films, but most of the time they're difficult for me to handle. But I really like this movie, even though there are a couple of scenes that I have to look away from because I feel a little squeamish. I never watch when they cut off What's-Her-Face's head. But I love it because it, like you said, it does something totally interesting. It's not just about this is really gross and shocking and bloody, but it's about a bigger idea. And especially I love that this film gets at the heart of why people watch stories like this. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll get into this, but I really appreciated your review of this on your website.
Well, I'll apologize first for the nightmares related, the Conjuring related nightmares.
Because of you.
Yeah, but it was a really great movie.
It was a good movie. It was sure. Just freaky.
Well, and you know, I would say I have similar aversions to, you know, films like Garden State.
Because you just can't look. You can't look when two characters like kiss at the end. Like, oh, I can't take it.
No, I mean, sometimes when movies are dealing with what I would call more of the very base level dramas of life, the mundane frustrations of suburban or middle class life. Like honestly, though, I know people going through those similar things. So watching those films, actually, you know, having been a pastor, it really just gets on my nerves that I can't touch that life, or they're missing things. Like there are ways I get aggravated by those types of films that I don't find myself enjoying those films. And so I think different things strike different people different ways. Whereas I can walk away from a horror movie. I can differentiate it, even though I believe some of the things that you see in The Conjuring and Paranormal Activity actually have happened. I think there's a level of involvement that you just have to be aware of, right? I mean, my wife loves roller coasters. She'll ride roller coasters all day. We went to Magic Mountain, and I was the first one to tap out. I was the one just like, you know what? I can't. I'm gonna throw up if I keep doing this, right? I mean, like, for some people, you can ride one, and you know, you're good for like a year. So I'm not an advocate for Christians to pursue horror movies. In fact, I think I make the point in the book. I don't remember. I've done some teaching on the side, but I don't believe that this will be any form of enjoyment that as a Christian I will experience in the kingdom to come. Like I think its usefulness and its purposes will have fully come to an end. I don't think we'll need it anymore. Mm-hmm. Because it's one of those things where I think I know actual living humans, not just anecdote stories, who have come to faith because of that scare that you're talking about in a faithless mm-hmm. life drove them to go. It was The Exorcist and another movie called Event Horizon. I know yep. two real humans who are Christians in part because of those films. And so I love the experience of the films and the effect that they can have on culture and people. And sometimes for Christians who I think start becoming functional, well, they might believe in God, but functionally, as far as the spiritual aspects of life, they become functional daily atheists. They don't think that those present that is present or reality. I think sometimes it can be a good reminder that, oh no, there's some dangerous things, and I shouldn't dabble, and I should advise my friends not to play with that Ouija board, and like there are things that can come in a film versus experiencing them in real life that sort of make us wary, which is okay. But I don't think that they have to be something standard in the diet. I think my palate was kind of ruined as a teenager because I was watching them for all the wrong reasons. Hellraiser, Friday the 13th. I was very sick of the Christianity I'd come from, so I was indulging in them. An early one that I really loved was Evil Dead 2, which, of course, it was a little more parody, Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
I was watching that movie, and I think it began to steer me, not necessarily toward Jesus, but at least then it's like, okay, no, there's humor here. They're playing with the art and the craft of it. There was something more than just sort of reveling in the horror. There was actually some both cinematic, artistic, and even just humor exploration. And so that began to, you know, it at least took me away from some of the darker things I might have gone down. Mm-hmm. And so I began to steer into more getting interested in film and story and various aspects and why this made me funny or why this made me jump. So it began to make me think a little bit. But Cabin in the Woods then really, and I say that because the cabin that you get to in Cabin in the Woods looks almost exactly like that classic cabin from Evil Dead, which is great. And you've got the elements of being out at the camp from like the Friday the 13th with all, a lot of those films would have the tropes of the different types of characters. Obviously, kind of the loose woman and the naive girl and kind of the jock guy. And it's a lot of those elements sort of all get combined as you get into this movie. And, of course, then the zombies, the zombie family, grabs onto that Romero slice. And then and yet they're redneck zombies, so you get a little bit of that Hills Have Eyes. And then they roll it all together. So, you know, I think in the same way, I would say Super 8 is a great shorthand for anyone who wants to experience, you know, every Spielberg movie ever made by J.J. Abrams. I think Cabin in the Woods really can be something where if Christians don't really like horror movies and don't want to watch a lot of them, it's like, that's fine. This might be a good film as an exercise. Just like you were saying, to get your brain around why the repetition and why we watch them and some of those things that are behind it, because it's like a crash course. Yeah. You do kind of get a little bit of everything thrown in, especially then with some of the things you get to experience at the end where you're seeing things from just about there's an homage to just about every horror franchise out there and even, you know, angry unicorns. So
is there any other kind? I mean,
yeah. And I mean, a lot of that stuff I know, I would be more nuanced for me if I had like prior context with some of that, you know, those things. But I mean,
you need a special subtitle track that tells you tells you every reference.
This is like, yeah.
Actually, is there a commentary track on the Blu-ray? Cause I don't think we've watched a commentary track. I would love to hear a commentary track. Maybe, you know, with Joss Whedon or, you know, Drew Goddard, like, actually talking. Gosh, now I'm upset that I didn't check this out before we recorded.
There's a lot of good extra material I haven't had a chance to check out either, but but I just know them all. No, I'm just kidding. That's it.
I don't want to brag.
Another thing that I love about this movie is that it's accessible to people like me. Because even though I don't have that context, I understand what I'm seeing. I mean, I understand the scary, you know, misogynistic gas station attendant and what he represents, you know. And
we all know that guy.
Oh, yeah. We all know him.
That's not a horror genre thing.
It's real life. I love that everything is very obvious on the outset. Everybody is very two-dimensional. And then, I mean, everything is so dramatically flipped. One of my favorite scenes is when the gas station attendant calls the main office to tell them that the kids had passed through. Am I on speakerphone? Yeah, I love how everything is turned on its head.
Well, yeah. One of the things about this movie specifically is that if we go by the review god that is Rotten Tomatoes, well, I mean, this movie is sitting at like a 91% approval rate. Okay, so when you go and there's horror movies in theaters, they always tend to make tons of money, and lots of people go see them. Even though you usually can't find a lot of people who admit to go seeing them, at least we can't where we are. but someone is, because, you know, people are paying like making a movie for like $5 million, and then this movie goes and makes like 70 or 80 million. So, you know, we get Paranormal Activity, we're on like 8 now or something like that. The Conjuring was so good.
I cannot even watch those commercials.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I really can't.
Just the commercials are too much.
Or the previews or whatever.
But like, most of those movies, even though tons of people are going to see them, like, they never get, like, critically reviewed at a very high rate. Or people never are like, oh, I really loved it. Or in my top 25, you know, I really think Paranormal Activity 2 is overrated. You know, 3 was really when it hit it, you know, its zenith.
Yeah. But a lot of people, when they watch the previews, they're like, I am going to go see that.
No.
You know, even just from the title.
So with Cabin in the Woods specifically, and I think it's, you know, one of the reasons that I really wanted to take the time to review it on the show is that it does hit that medium where it's accessible to everyone, people who are into horror, people who are not. And I love, James, what you're saying, like, especially Christians, if you're not really sure you ever want to see a horror movie, which I would also agree, you know, I wouldn't recommend horror movies just for the sake of being like, they're good, go do it. Mm-hmm. I do think, and you have a lot of great, I think, YouTube videos that you made about this. You have a really good Cinemagogue, or post on your site Cinemagogue, about like horror movies make us realize that there are things outside of the natural world. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the few places where we get to, or we have to confront the fact that there is something supernatural.
Mm-hmm. And we have to think about things like, you know, the fears that we have that we can't explain away, or, you know, things that we don't want to face. Mm-hmm. It forces us to face them.
Yeah. I mean, if people have a friend, you know, a mixed group of friends, that's assuming, right? Assuming you hang out with people who think differently than you. Yeah. Maybe you get one chance, maybe you get two chances. They don't want to hear you talk about Jesus. But the director, one of the directors that I actually appreciate, he's not my favorite director. He's working hard. He did Deliver Us from Evil this year, which mm-hmm. Scott Derrickson. Mm-hmm. He's working in the genre specifically for that. It's like, this is one of the mm-hmm. few places you can go to a movie with your friends, and then you come out, and even if it's not hitting on the core of Christendom, like, you're still like, man, is there an afterlife? Are mm-hmm. there demonic? You know, are there demons? And you're never. That's at least, it's a sideways door. You know, if the devil exists, I think that was at the end of The Conjuring too. I mean, it's just like, yeah, right, the devil exists. Right up there on screen. Conversely, God exists. Like, it's a sideways door back into that conversation. And so that's why I think it is profoundly useful in a mixed group. And even if it's something absurd like Freddy, you know, you're just like, well, wow, this guy comes back from the dead. Like, you're still talking about back from the dead. I don't think anybody mm-hmm. really thinks guys with claws come back into your dreams, but it still does sort of tear open the door there a little bit to at least talk and consider, and certainly make paranoid those who have really no hope or no solidified worldview, it at least sort of claws at that, it begins to gnaw at their brain a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I got Freddy and the zombie metaphor in there.
Well done.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think much like, okay, there's two sides of the coin, it's really hard to make sure that you're always, I guess, on the more constructive side, because especially what we do here at Real World Theology, what you do at Cinemagogue, and what a number of other great sites do for or by Christians, is trying to engage culture. Not saying that, like, grace covers all, everything's permissible, let's just go do it, stop being a stick in the mud. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just go watch, like, horror films just because we can. Or let's go watch this movie that has questionable material on it just because we can. It's like realizing that by engaging the narratives in these movies, you have a foothold for a conversation that you can have. Like I said, especially if you're in a situation where you do have a mixed group of friends. You know, you have people all over the belief spectrum. So, you know, not to go out and seek horror movies. But, you know, if you have friends who are into horror movies and they're not Christian, I mean, I think this is one of the best ways. Not just like, hey, we're watching Game of Thrones together because, you know, whatever. I'm going to be the cool Christian friend.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think can be valid. Also, this one is like, hey, you want to watch a movie about, just like you're saying, James, things coming back from the dead. Like, what does that even mean? Mm-hmm. Like, are there ghosts? What does it mean to be a spirit? Like, in your world, like, how do you come back from something that you think just ends?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
are you when you come back? Are you the same, or
like, to have a spirit, like, there's got to be some kind of other force or energy or plane of existence. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you believe in ghosts, but you don't believe in God. Okay, what does that mean? Or, you know, so, like I said, I'm probably going to go peruse around Cinemagogue and find all these links so I can make sure I put them in the show mm-hmm. notes. But, so, okay, so moving specifically on the, what you got?
What was that?
What was that?
I was just going to say, Cabin in the Woods, so wonderfully hits on so many levels. It begins to get there. And even just to be aware that films like this are in many ways even then critiquing a view of God and maybe even Christianity. Because I think there's some very pointed, perhaps even grenades being lobbed at Christendom in the end of this mm-hmm. movie, depending on how you interpret the end of the film. There are some harsh pot shots. And then even some surprisingly anti what I would say is the normal humanist logic. I don't know where this film lands because it's very, very confusing. I mean, here it has so much meta commentary, and I honestly feel like it's just sort of splashing around like a kid playing in the pool. Like, I don't know that it's specifically trying to say anything, but that almost makes it more fascinating because you find its flaws and you begin to work with it because you start peeling back the layers. I mean, you've got for anybody who doesn't know horror movies, you do have all of the tropes I think they expect. For a lot of people, mm-hmm. I don't care if they're Christians or not, you're like, oh yeah, they go out to the cabin, they do, like, this is the horror movie that everybody likes to watch, which isn't entirely true, but that's, it begins there. But then you peel back the layers, like, oh crap, then it's, you sort of begin to look at these watchers and assume, again, if you're not a regular horror movie person, you think that these people watching are a lot like the calloused, desensitized horror mm-hmm. movie aficionados. Mm-hmm. So it's almost kind of trashing on horror lovers. Like, it's, wow, is this, mm-hmm. this actually mocking people who like horror? Or is this showing how callous and desensitized they are? They're betting on things. They're doing all this. There's sort of the one or two characters that are in place there, the one security guard, the mm-hmm. one gal, and they're almost sort of at least a little bit of conscience, even though they're still playing along. Which is, it's like, here, you're still playing into and see the logic of it and it has to happen, but yet you're kind of decrying it. Well, what kind of hypocrisy is that? You mm-hmm. you've got levels of horror viewers and people who understand it, but then you peel it back again, and what we're really talking about is, I think, both the gods of the film that are watching, and then maybe us as the viewers / gods of the film that are watching, we're watching this recurring tale about characters who go somewhere and go down, something's been put in the middle of it, which if they choose to transgress, they will then face punishment and blood atonement for.
It's like, keywords. Yeah. You know?
And well, is there a part of us, I think, Christian or not, I don't care where, since I'm definitely coming from a story formed worldview where all mankind through one man went to the one place and took the one thing that they shouldn't, and maybe they didn't say an incantation but they took a bite and someone brought in curse and death. And we've all been suffering from it, and we've all been suffering then from our own transgression on top of that. And part of me, maybe just part of me, even though I'm very glad that I also believe my story has a savior to it, apart from that savior, I deserve to get the sod on my neck. Like, there's almost something where we're vicariously living out transgression and the wages of it happening mm-hmm. again and again. It's like, what exactly is this, what does that say? What does that say about our love of horror movies as just humans in general, or our fear of them, right? Even people who don't want to go, what about the fear of them? And mm-hmm. and then what also are we touching on? It also then, you've got story writers telling a story then about dark gods who they demand this happen, and yet it almost seems unfair. They've gamed the system, right? There's all these objects down there. It seems they're almost quail. It's the old question of why it goes all the way back. You put all these objects there for the transgressors. Is that really fair?
Yeah.
You sort of push them into stereotypical roles and decisions.
You have and the gases then, and yeah.
And then hold them accountable. And you know what? That's honestly a critique. I've heard that critique against Christianity. Well, why did God mm-hmm. put the thing in the garden? Why did he put the temptation mm-hmm. there? So he kind of wanted mankind to fall. And now he's punished.
Yeah, it feels like not choice. I mean, they talk a lot about choice in this film, that they have to choose to transgress, but they're manipulated. So is it really choice when you are pushed towards something?
Which to me just plays into, is there actually a very, very canny writer playing with form here a little bit to suggest, I mean, some, right, we have this dance within Christianity too, right? Is it free will or is it predestined? We've got those struggles even within our own camp, let alone outside with people who maybe don't believe the story I do. So even within our own story, we've got some tension and some framework about those issues. And so, mm-hmm. man, it's funny how one little horror movie can do that. But I think the biggest thing then is probably the choices that are made at the very end as far as what we think of humanity.
Yeah. Well, and the choice when they decide, I mean, we didn't say spoilers, but we always have spoilers on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But, the choice they make at the end to say that humanity deserves to die feels like reminds me of a scene previous where they're thinking that it's all over. The virgin is the last one that's left. And on all the big screens, you see her being thrown around and punched and, you know, hurt by this zombie. And
zombie redneck.
That's yeah. And that's in the background. And in the foreground, everybody is partying and relaxed. And you have one of the main guys, I think it's Hatley, starting to say, you know, he's starting to think about it a little bit and saying, I kind of feel bad for them. You know, like, is this right? And then someone comes in with tequila and he's not, you know, thinking yeah. about it anymore.
Yeah.
That we're so quickly, like pulled away from thinking about things like this, because if somebody else can suffer for our comfort, it's pretty easy to look away from that if we're not the ones having to deal with it.
It's like if there were deadly diseases ravaging like a continent like Africa, like we don't care. But if they come to America,
yeah. we're like, what?
We suddenly are worried about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
I mean, hypothetically.
Yeah. So, I mean, even right there, I mean, there are tons of examples in the film itself about ways that humanity sucks and should maybe... should go the way of the dodo. But, you know, actually that very last scene, even though it feels really bleak, where they say, you know, morality is really meaningless, the gods are vengeful and don't care about us, and humanity is horrible, so it's time for us to go. I mean, that is really bleak. And the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's where we're going to leave this? You know, the world's crumbling around them. But watching it this last time, what's his name? The fool, the guy Marty? That's making pot all the time. Yeah, Marty.
Marty, yeah.
When he is faced with a choice, so you either die now or you die with everybody. And he says, you know, he's like, well, that doesn't feel like much of a much of a choice. That, I don't know. I really just thought about that as a metaphor for our, you know, our sacrificial lamb who chose to face something that terrifying. You know, it wasn't an easy choice for him, but he chose to lay down his life for our atonement. So even though that's not where the film goes, it reminded me of that, you know, it wasn't an easy thing to lay down his life, but we have somebody who is willing to do that for somebody who didn't, for people who didn't deserve it, who weren't worth it.
Yeah. No, I was really surprised because the film in so many ways kind of portrays him as the hero and mm-hmm. and in other ways kind of portrays then that, you know, the solution to overcoming evil is really good weed, apparently. But not endorsing that, just saying that seemed to be a...
I'm just saying.
That's what the movie seemed to be saying.
That is where the movie seemed to be stretching that a little bit. And
I don't know. I think the voters in Washington have also said that.
Yeah. It comes with my neighborhood, apparently. But it's just funny. I mean, we're celebrating an anniversary for Ghostbusters and mm-hmm. 30 years. And I'm reminded in that movie when they're talking about the plot to sort of, to take, you know, of Shandor, kind of the guy who built the building and did the things in that. There's actually a joke where they're in the prison, and Egon says, you know, that Shandor was a cult leader who said society was too sick to survive. And of course, there's a dramatic pause. They kind of look around at all the prisoners in the jail, and then they just continue. You on, and but of course the Ghostbusters go and they save the day. Like, I mean, where in culture do we actually land a film with like, yeah, you know, I think we are too sick to survive, and mm-hmm. and it didn't really feel honest to me because we're trapped down there with these two very classic caricatures, and the building's shaking and we've seen all the monsters and we've seen some really really horrible people running the game, but. So, like you were just saying earlier, but you know what? Just for 1 minute, stop and think of those little kids in Africa. Think of an 11-year-old boy in Africa. You know, struggling. You know, with struggling to have enough to eat and look, but yet still playing games with other children. Like, you know, if you stop for a minute, this just seems like cynical hipster logic at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. This doesn't. Yeah, I'm educated. I'm in college. Humanity's too sick to survive. Whatever. And it's really like that's where you're going to make that call. Obviously, weed induced. So, you know, there's maybe some good commentary to take there. It was one of those things too. Where it even defies some of the sacrificial logic of other movies, right? I mean, here you had Dana with Dana, actually, yeah, Dana in Ghostbusters. Dana's the virgin, as it were, in this
what?
Movie. Right, she's told that the, you know, just killing him will avert countless other deaths. There's a greater good. You know, go ahead and do that. I mean, the movie could have gone a dozen different directions, but I was thinking that she would actually pull the trigger because, mm-hmm. hey, right, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, right? This, right. you know, come on, doesn't she listen to Spock? I mean, like that.
Exactly. Well, and I mean, Kirk doesn't listen to Spock. Does anyone really ever listen to Spock?
No, that's true. That's
if we listened to Spock, we would have stopped with Star Trek movies at like 2, I guess.
Oh, and yeah, well, and that's. That you're always trying to count the cost. Even if you're counting the cost, if you can save the one and still get away with it, like, you know, if Kirk can pull out his no-win scenario, that's great, but they just pull out the, or they can, you know, if you, they can't beat the no-win scenario, so they just let the whole world not win. That seemed mm-hmm. very, yeah. very, very bleak and strange, and yet almost, I mean, there's part of me that's too, I mean, the film's kind of talking about our obsession or showcasing our obsession with this sort of the ritual of this transgressing stereotypical people, sinners, and the need for some kind of atonement, and then actually kind of saying, man, they're kind of joining the Calvinists at the end, right? We're totally depraved. I guess we're totally depraved. Just let's screw this. It's done. You know,
well, it's that, that pseudo schizophrenic nature of this film, and I think you hit it on it before, like there's so many ideas that get thrown out. Mm-hmm. After I watched this film the first time, I was like, this is saying so much, like I'm gonna need to watch it again. But on recurring viewings, it reminds me a lot of how I feel about The Matrix, when people are like, oh, you know you review movies like with a theological kind of spin, you got to talk about The Matrix because it's so obviously this or that, and then everyone thinks it's something different because mm-hmm. they just throw so much in, you know. It's like, just let's just see what sticks on the wall, you know. Yeah. Because they're like, oh, The Matrix is a Christian movie, The Matrix is a, you know, a Hindu movie or a Buddhist movie, you know, like there's and it's an atheist, it's obviously atheist, you know, like all these kind of things, and everyone has their argument. So when I look at this movie, I'm like, okay, I know Joss Whedon is a genius when it comes to storytelling, but like, do they actually know what they're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because they seem to be contradicting themselves so many times.
Yeah.
And I've had some conversations recently, kind of in preparation for this, being like, hey, what do you think their point was at the end? Like, and centering on this question, like, if humanity's gonna insist on a penal substitution via their beliefs or their humanistic ways or whatever, if they're going to fall back on having some kind of penal substitution for transgressions, like, is the movie saying that they don't deserve to go on? And you know, if you have to resort to this is the way you exist, you don't deserve to exist at all? Or is that something that just kind of haphazardly they stumbled upon trying to make like a pot-induced profound ending, you know?
Or, I mean, it could be saying too that kind of system can't go on forever, that it is unsustainable.
Well, and like I said, are they actually saying that though? Mm. Or are they just trying to get us to talk about it? Either way, you know,
yeah.
We're talking about it, so when?
Well, yeah, you roll back to even, I mean, the Old Testament system didn't actually involve human sacrifice, mm-hmm. But you know, that was not sustainable, nor did it really cover things. Like, it wasn't sustainable, it wasn't functional, it wasn't truly efficacious in the same way that ultimately the fulfillment of that was in the Christian view. So it does bring into question, yeah, like I like the idea of, is it sustainable? Like, like something has to break through, something has to end, that cycle has to be broken. There has to be something that truly brings restoration,
mm-hmm.
and isn't just about some kind, and just isn't appeasement, something that actually brings it back. And I don't know, there's even that weird moment where they're sitting there talking about it, and they're like, man, like dark gods or whatever, it'd be kind of cool to see. And then like the last shot is this mighty hand coming up, mm-hmm. and there's almost an awe for that, which you kind of see in some of the strange, I mean, that's kind of the fascination in the horror genre with even things like Cthulhu and a lot of H.P. Lovecraft writings. It's like, you don't want to wake these elder gods, because they're so unfathomable, just seeing them will drive you insane, but that there's mm-hmm. still, like, we kind of want them to stay sleeping, but there's still something awesome about their return. And there is something about our desire to both have control, keep God at arm's length, but yet still have an awe for the majesty, or still at least a curiosity that I think permeates people who even don't necessarily believe, or at least are agnostic. I think this film primarily is agnostic. I think it kind of wants mm-hmm. pieces of its, it wants a sampling of the cake, and it wants to eat it too, and it wants to keep it on the shelf, and it wants everything. I think that's typical of a lot of Joss Whedon's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I think we see that in a lot of the ideas where he wants to acknowledge, and I think it's a desire even of this latest generation to sort of acknowledge and try to embrace and accept and just be content with contradiction, which I'm not sure. I'm not there, although. There's tensions even within the faith I have. I mean, that's why we have Catholics and Protestants and a thousand other things too. But
that's why I think it's interesting that they kind of have this commentary that you hinted on, or what you basically said earlier about them not necessarily making fun of people who watch horror movies, but kind of commentating on people who watch and have the ability to disconnect themselves. Because, and one of the scenes that I think is probably the most poignant scenes that I think was intentionally done for the reason it's done, is everything in this movie kind of takes what you think and it flips it on its head, or mm-hmm. at least it tries to. You know, oh, like, this is the thing you've seen 100 times before? Well, we're going to give you what you want because that's why you're here. But we're also going to completely 100% change it at the same time. So you get what you want, but you don't get anything like you thought you wanted. And so that comes down to this one scene where we're an audience watching a movie about gods who are watching people running this facade while they're watching these teenagers. Mm-hmm. And in this, like I said, in this one scene, we have the see-through mirror. So they're watching the teenagers, one of which is watching another teenager. And it's like, mm-hmm. it's like, watcherception, I guess. But in this scene, like I said, why it's so poignant to me is that it starts out with exactly what you think the audience wants. You know, you go see a horror film, you always get like the girl taking off her clothes for no real reason, no plot driven excuse for her to be doing this, or for this being a part of the visual story. But what happens is the guy makes the choice that most guys don't make in horror movies, mm-hmm. and says, "Hey, you know, I can see you. He stopped her right before she takes her bra off," and he's like, "Okay, we'll switch rooms." And what happens is now she's on the other side of the mirror, and she doesn't choose to stop him.
She does. She puts a painting back.
Well, I mean, but eventually, like, we've already seen everything. We've seen his chest. His bra is already off.
Well, they do that a lot too, because like they're trying to get the other girl to take off her shirt and she's not doing it. They keep having to do things to make her take off her shirt, or they do something to make them split up because they're like, we cannot split up. We have to stick together.
Let's put some gas in this room. Splitting up's a great idea.
And you know, even though I understand that the far end implications of this aren't necessarily true to my faith, it was empowering to see these people who we wrote off as stereotypes mm-hmm. totally being better than that. I mean, like, the jock is really intelligent and sacrificial and caring, and that it's only because they're forced and manipulated that they make these choices that we assume, you know, they would make on their own or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it was actually, I mean, it felt good. It feels good when, like, Marty comes back. You know, you think he's dead and he comes back. You're like, we're overcomers, you know? We can be good. We can care for each other. We can say, like, hey, you know what? I was about to see you naked and I'm not. You know, I don't think that's right. Like, we can make those good choices. So that felt kind of empowering.
Yeah, there's kind of an arc. There's kind of an arc to it, because it seems like a much lesser commentary, but in some ways it's not the main thrust of the story, but there is sort of that idea of people are being manipulated subtly, whether it's their hair products, whether it's mm-hmm. just suggestions, whether it's people treating them in a certain way. But then we see it at the first part, there's almost a sad judgment on how, I mean, yes, they're using chemical inducements, but take away that idea, and it's like people are being manipulated into just embracing the stereotypes. Like mm-hmm. the loose woman is encouraged toward being a loose woman and keeps going that direction. The other person is being, you know, they're tainting the wheat. They swing it back around then to the characters who actually then strike, kind of push back against that and overcome the stereotype, which is cool. But there was almost this idea, almost separate from the story of gods and even separate from the story mm-hmm. of horror movies, almost to just where. You know, sometimes we find ourselves, I don't know about you, sometimes people stereotype us and we actually start kind of living those out. Like we actually kind of begin to embrace them if people, the more people talk about them or kind of do things toward that, I think people can actually become the stereotypes they're being accused of. And so again, there's actually just a nice, so cool sub story there of what does it look like to actually overcome that? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love that too. And then they actually change, and then the comeuppance then transfers to the watchers, which I think to me is another one of those beautiful things that is saying something about it. I think a lot of times horror movies provide a form of catharsis because you watch somebody transgress, you watch somebody then get punished for it and get their head lopped off by Jason or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then you leave the theater and you're like, phew, but for the grace of, well, whatever I believe in, go I, right? I mean, you, yeah. Right? I mean, like that's there is a purging and a catharsis that happens just like the old Greek, that's the grand guignol, the, you know, you go watch the crazy blood plays even back in the old, you know, the old theater days. And you're like, wow, those people suffered horrible deaths. They made bad decisions. I'm going home to my bed. Like there's a strange.
There's justice, but I don't have to feel the pain of that.
And you're seeing it with your friends, and maybe you're even mm-hmm. making some, you know, maybe even in the theater, you're like, oh, I totally thought so and so would get killed first. So you really are a lot of horror watchers are the wagering watchers that are in the movie. And so then mm-hmm. when things get unleashed on them, it's just like, you know, like someday comeuppance is coming for you too. I think, like, there's mm-hmm. something haunting where, again, this turns the tropes on its head and says you're some of these people with your jokes and your humor and your attitude toward watching these people go through these things. Guess what? Your day's coming. Mm-hmm. Like, that's maybe by Merman, you know.
Maybe. Most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even in that tiny scene, it's like he wanted to see a Merman so bad and he got to see it. Right up close.
And it's not what he wanted.
Yeah, it's not what he wanted.
Well, I mean, and I think we live in a society, at least in this country, that is hungry for justice
mm-hmm.
for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing. I mean, like, all you have to do is, I mean, like, whether it's, I don't know, how this country deals with other countries, how our military deals with other militaries. Heck, how our own Christian, I don't know, news or and how Christians deal with each other.
Yeah.
You know, we always want to hold other people accountable for their transgressions.
Mm-hmm.
But we never take the time to really go, well, I guess if I was in that situation, I would really hope someone had some grace for me.
Mm-hmm.
We just go, yeah, down with them. Make them apologize. Make them write a letter and post it to some website.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, just, you know, this is what we demand.
Yeah.
Why are they not, you know, what we, in, you know, in pro sports, like, this is what we have. Like, one bad thing happens with a player. Why isn't the commissioner stepping down? Because he should have had a better set of rules in place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, mm-hmm. someone call for their job. Someone has to pay. There has to be punishment for this transgression. But obviously, like I said, you know, we don't often realize that we are the watchers mm-hmm. as well.
But we're never asking, we're never calling justice down for ourselves.
Yeah, we're like, hey, I apologize. What's the big deal? You know? What about second chances? You know, it's like most everything that I see. I mean, you know, I do this. I'm sure Laura does this. You know, James, well, maybe not Laura. James definitely does this. I do this. Laura probably doesn't. But I mean, like I say, I find it something that's inherent in humanity, which to me, I think is another great reason why we end up seeing people watching horror movies and kind of walking out of the theater, like you're saying, James, like, you know, they saw someone transgress. They are somehow, you know, in a weird way fulfilled
mm-hmm.
by seeing the transgressors punished. And why movies in general, we almost always like to see the good guy win, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, Loki shows up, Loki does bad things. You know, Loki gets hit with Thor's hammer, or Loki gets slammed down by the Hulk. You know, that's what we want. Yeah. We want to see justice done on people that we consider bad. So, I mean, I would further argue that it's not something that our religion has taught us. It's not something that our particular belief system has taught us, because whether you're agnostic or you're Christian or whatever, almost I haven't met anyone who doesn't want to see evil punished. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's inherent in us. And to me, when something is inherent in all of humanity and it doesn't necessarily fit into the evil needs to be punished because that'll help our species grow further. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of defies the scientific logic. It says, why? What image have we been created in that longs for justice?
I guess we're kind of seeing that in the antihero, that whole search for justice or dealing with the concept of justice in our current obsession with antiheroes, because we are, you know, it's a different way of looking at it. Instead of watching somebody who's definitely bad do bad things and then get punished for it, we have these heroes who we can understand why they do. You know, they're complicated, they're complex, they've had pain in their lives. I find those villains very interesting. Villains who, like I always say, villains who think they're the heroes are the most interesting. They think that they're doing the right thing, or they have reasons for what they're doing. They've been hurt, or, you know, they're trying to get retribution or whatever. So well, that's another way of dealing with that need for justice.
But that's why we actually have a bunch of people. That's why there's a whole, you know, cluster of, you know, Loki shippers, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Because then you find yourself in that conundrum. You're like, wait a minute, I understand some of those pains. I went through some of those things. I faced what felt like fatherly favoritism, or, you know, I faced some of these issues. Mm-hmm. So now can this character, do I really want him killed? Do I really, like, mm-hmm. he sort of reminds me of me. And so you flip it around to this movie and you begin to realize, you know, that, and that's kind of, I mean, I guess that's what Marty and Dana figure out. They're like, you know what? They're kind of at the no one's righteous, no, not one kind of thing. And just like, yeah. Just let this thing go. Like, I somehow want Loki's punishment a little less severe because I realize there's something of him in me and I'm not Captain America. Or we're all kind of on this crappy, screwed up level. I mean, you know, I mean, it's Tony Stark even never really atoned for all of his stuff. I mean, like, it's what do you do with that? So you wind up with this ending of resignation, and maybe then I'm too harsh when I jump to it, a cynical hipster ending. Maybe in some ways that there is that felt idea of maybe the horror movies, even this one in it, even that's sort of genre bending. I think the ones that linger the most are the ones that kind of don't allow us to run away from some of those realities.
Yeah.
And you think about The Ring was years ago.
Laura, don't think about The Ring.
don't think about it at all. But the idea was the horror movies that were loved so much in the 80s and 90s, a lot of times at the end of each movie, you saw other people get punished, and then there was always that formula to put the genie back in the bottle. Mm-hmm. With then maybe the tease that, well, he'll be back in the next movie, but there was still a sense that there were rules and they could be overcome. And you figure out the rules for the monster and then you can overcome the monster, and yay, you know, or proton packs, whatever takes care of it.
Exactly.
And it's the runs that have really been the most disturbing are the ones that don't quite have all the answers summed up at the end, or there's a powerful idea that even your formula or your incantation really can't fix this thing. I mean, like, that's or you won't turn to the, or you reject the one thing, like in Paranormal Activity, you don't even consider the one thing that might actually be effectual in dealing with that. And so if you won't face that reality, again, if you won't face the reality that maybe there's something else that might save you, and you just want it safely packaged back up so you don't have to think about the fact that it might get loose and you might find yourself skewered by a unicorn or
like you do.
Yeah. That's my constant dream. That's my nightmare right there. But, although I think in my Neil Patrick Harris is writing it, but that's, you know, that's another show.
Fairly appropriate, I would say. I think Neil Patrick Harris probably has dreams of riding unicorns. I really do. I wouldn't be surprised if he came out at the Oscars riding on a unicorn.
which
is he hosting the Oscars?
Yeah, he's hosting the Oscars.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be amazing! I'm so excited.
Okay, so I'll have a chance for final thoughts, but for now, like I want to kind of start wrapping us up. We've gone about as long as we need to. We've taken up a lot of James's time, a lot of Laura's time. Laura's a very busy person.
Sorry,
so
Laura.
I got to get back to my knitting.
That's right,
guys.
So I want to do what we usually do at the end of the show, and even with this movie, we all really enjoyed it. It's typically, like I said, I've found very few people who have seen this movie and not enjoyed it. But with almost every movie, there's parts that kind of make you say, come on. So, James, if there's anything in this movie, what about it made you kind of say, come on?
Well, there are ways of getting, did I need Christian friends that I know are going to see this movie, or even, we have friends of all ages. I think the movie could have got across what it needed. It even could have got to the point like, did I need to see topless women? There's ways to, like, we had a scenario where there are watchers watching what's transpiring. So I didn't necessarily need to see the nudity that was shown. You could have communicated. I understand it's a tradition in horror movies, but the internal watchers, the internal watchers could have watched it and not me. So that's there's that. I do understand why they did it, because of the idea of the self awareness that the film had and the meta commentary. But if I want to wholeheartedly endorse a film, it's always hard to tell a good 2/3 of my friends to go see a film like that with without having to really qualify that. No, it's still worth it, even
though it's
or maybe a third of my friends were like, you know what, I know where you're at, I guess you probably shouldn't see this movie because you don't seem to be seeing that. So that's always a bummer, where I feel like sadly I have to know my friends and know which ones are probably restricted. So that's always a bummer.
Well, I think that also raises a good point, because we tend to review a lot of movies on this podcast, and I know that you review like all across the board on CinemaGog. And there's always this concept of, like, not what all things permissible, but not all things
beneficial.
I was gonna say edifying. I was like, that's not it though.
Yeah.
So we always keep that in mind with the audience. So just because we enjoy something doesn't mean that there aren't things that, not everything's for everybody.
Yeah.
So Laura, what kind of made you scratch your head?
I don't know if I really have anything. Do I need to make something up?
Make something up.
Some things are very convenient, just to make a point or whatever. Like, the redneck zombie girl, she makes it all the way down,
through all
the mayhem to be the very last, horror that they face. Or, like, how in the world did they end up going to, like, the pit? Like, how'd they find their way down there? That seems kind of convenient. I mean, wouldn't that be kind of, like, under tight security or something? They just kind of wander in through a hole in the wall?
Yeah.
So, some convenient stuff like that. But, I mean, like, I know why it was there.
Yeah.
My other major complaint, and not that, a spoiler, we've given tons of spoilers. Not that I really lament having Sigourney Weaver show up, but come on, it really should have been Jamie Lee Curtis. I'm just.
I think that's a very fair point. I mean, I guess. Did she get the nod because of Alien?
Oh, yeah, sure. Alien works. And the movie was so focused on supernatural, and she was in Ghostbusters, right? Come on, I can't.
Well,
say.
She was an alien. Alien is like, Alien is scary. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a straight up horror. Like, it gets the sci-fi because it deals with obviously aliens, but like it is a creature in the dark horror, horror film. Mm-hmm. So, but
I mean, if you couldn't get Jamie Lee Curtis, it was the obvious choice. I understand that. That's totally.
It's like,
but she's the scream queen. Come on. Halloween. I mean, just,
yeah. So maybe it's like a come on.
Maybe
moment
they
with
tried
an asterisk.
To get Curtis.
Yeah, it's got an asterisk,
and they couldn't.
So not knowing who they tried to get first.
Yeah.
You think yeah. The asterisk.
Sorry.
Okay, so I think the only thing. Well, I mean, there were a couple whatevers, but nothing that really made me kind of roll my eyes. Except for, I really thought that Chris Kurt Hemsworth, his death was a. I mean, it was. I just didn't feel it.
Oh, like, I think I laughed at that more than not more than anything else in the movie. I thought
it was funny, but I thought like I was like, does this count? Like by their own rules, you know? Mm-hmm. Like I was like, he wasn't like punished via the way that they had been selected to be punished.
Yeah, like his death was like sacrificial for the group.
Yeah, I was like, if anything.
He gets
an extra life. You know, if this is Scott Pilgrim, he's coming back.
Maybe it was his hubris at thinking that he could actually jump that, like this jock thinking he could actually jump that canyon.
It's pride.
Yeah, it's wrong.
But yeah. So I didn't think it wasn't funny.
Gotcha.
You know, I did think that that's the last time we saw that. You are right. It did cross my mind. It's funny so you don't think about it, but technically he just sort of ran up against the edge of the board and fell. Like that. Didn't really kind of get it. The letter, not the spirit of the law, as it were.
Mm-hmm. okay, so we end on a positive note. James, what was your favorite part of this movie?
Oh, my favorite part of the movie.
If you have to, you can throw a cluster of things. Rapid fire.
I'd say like the motorcycle. I'd say like take the motorcycle moment, but even go all the way back. Take the motorcycle moment, but go all the way back to the beginning when they just get in the little golf cart and then boom, the words cabin on the wood in the woods.
Uh-huh.
Come on. So,
yeah.
So hard, fast and freaky that you jump. I think the one thing we didn't talk about in all our acknowledging is that a main trope of horror movies is the jump scares and just the cat mm-hmm. jumping out of the cupboard. This movie has plays with so many things, but even with that, where there's such a tension release going on between the comedy and the horror that there are a few moments like that. And then the motorcycle moment where it's just like, oh, okay. Even for my friends that hate horror movies, there's this pressure release valve that they keep hitting where things are so absurd in that though I'm trying to think of, and you know, the merman and that really,
yeah.
I'm going to grab the merman then as sort of the crescendo of that and the unicorn too. Like
yeah, the unicorn.
There's
yeah.
three or four moments where you're just like, oh my gosh, this is so silly. I don't have to go to bed and have nightmares for several days. I can get what it's saying. Mm-hmm. I can even be scared in the moment, but I don't have to carry this with me. And I think for best, just the accessibility that I love mm-hmm. those few poignant moments because I'm sitting there enjoying it on a ton of levels, but I'm also thinking, all right, this is something I can share a little more broadly.
Yeah. Oh, and when he shows up or when Marty shows up at the end. Or not the end, but like to save Dana.
Oh yeah,
and like he rolls out his like long bong again and beats the redneck zombie with the bong.
Mm-hmm.
Did not see that. That was a true surprise my first time through.
Yep.
Yeah.
So was that
yours then?
Well, I love what you're saying in general. Like that concept that makes it accessible. Like it has those beats that kind of keep it. I don't know. Keep it accessible. And I would say that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite moment was something that shows that I'm probably no better than most of the people who see horror movies. Because I just love when all the monsters were released. When the elevators all ding and the SWAT team basically is there and all the monsters just like come out.
You did this. Oh, when they all come out. Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
It was
like the second wave.
Oh yeah.
Not the watershed. It'd be the bloodshed moment. Then I think that really
mm-hmm. exactly. So I just thought it was so cool, and I mean, I just love it, seeing everything, like seeing all the different ways, all the different like homages, you know, by having every single kind of monster just all the way, you know, like I said, it includes like the merman and the unicorn, mm-hmm. those concepts. Like, we had the huge bat, you know, the scary little girl, the dude with the little device, you know, like every way that you've tried to scare people, like they all come out and you get to, they all get little quick cameos.
Mm-hmm.
That and the big board. Because someone was like, but I pick zombies. Oh, yeah. But this is redneck zombie family, you know, or tortured redneck zombie family or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Which does seem a little like cheating. I'm just like, that. Yeah. That's, come on. Maintenance should not have taken that. But no, Mike, you always press me to find my moment. My moment was just before that. I think my moment was the slower when they're in the elevator carts. I think that the moment, yeah, where I just had my breath taken away and had that moment of... Oh my gosh, I'm always going to remember this movie.
You see all the cubes?
Yeah, they move through the cubes. And mm-hmm. because I'm sitting there, I was like, oh, it's this is Pinhead. Oh, this is an American Werewolf in London. This is a moment where they're slowly moving you through. It also reminded me of a cool movie called Cube, if you ever want to watch a suspense film, but where people are trapped in cubes and moving around. But just that moment, sort of the mind-blowing moment, a great crescendo when they all bust out, that's true. But for mm-hmm. me, that more passive moment of, again, now I'm the observer, but we're actually mm-hmm. sort of watching the tropes before us. That was crazy. So,
mm-hmm.
So Laura,
I think most of my favorite moments happen like on the outside of the actual cabin. Like, what do we even call that? Like the people who are orchestrating everything.
Like the watchers.
Yeah, the watchers. I think most of my favorite moments happen there. Like, I laughed out loud when the guy on the scary guy talking, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Helen and Brimstone, who's on speakerphone. And, I love the, the board with everything on it, everyone taking bets, and, mm-hmm. and everything is so matter of fact. It's just, I mean, it's such a brilliant juxtaposition of tone between what's happening here and this very brightly lit. Everyone's nonchalant talking about, you know, their woes at home, and then you have these kids trapped in this horrifying experience. So I think most of my favorite moments happened there. And, you know, and again, like the humor, but also, also this, like the soberness of that moment where he's kind of like, oh man, Hatley's like, maybe this isn't great what we're doing, and Dana's being thrown around on the dock and everyone's drinking tequila and partying. So I just like the the juxtaposition of that.
The commentary.
Yeah.
Well, I also like that part where when Sigourney Weaver's basically explaining all the roles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like that look on Marty's face when she says like the fool, and he puts two and two together. and then she's like, and the virgin, and like she's like, Dana's like,
yeah,
that look on her face, and she's like, "Well, we work with what we got."
Yeah, we work with what we have.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, Laura, do you have any final thoughts?
I guess my only final thought to listeners would be that I'm not really a horror person, but I love this movie. I love watching it. I think it has a lot of value. I love what you kind of, how you framed it, James, that it's kind of like a crash course in horror. Like, it tells you what's there, what the value is, without maybe some of the things that turn people off of horror.
Cool. James, final thoughts.
Well, I'll just take that and run with it. I mean, I've never been one. In fact, as I get older, and I actually meet people who've experienced some really traumatic spiritual oppression and other things that I do think mm-hmm. are real. And when I was young, I was just be like, horror movies are like, I was all about pushing Christians to go see them. And I've changed over the years. Like, this does work in a way sort of to give you that lesson without, and I think if it's a gateway to experimenting with some more, or maybe then considering going to see them with friends, that would then lead the conversation. If it just sort of maybe, you know, girds you up a little bit, just sort of, it's like, oh, okay, I kind of get this. I could actually go see a few more, mm-hmm. as long as I temper. It's like, I never want to push mm-hmm. people in that direction, but I think there are a lot of, particularly 20, 30 somethings, there's a landscape of these stories that are ripe for conversation, ripe for these things. And so this movie is so insightful, both from a Christian and non-Christian perspective. It'll load you up with the ability to go do it. And so that I would, yeah. Again, I don't tell people to go see The Conjuring that have actually experienced some of those realities. Like, no, yeah. You get it. You know, I don't tell people to go see Requiem for a Dream that have had extensive drug use in their past. You know, I just like there's certain things where it's just, no, I get it. You don't need to go there. You understand. that's great. But for some people who maybe taken it as lightly as the people in that room, even people who don't frequent those types of movies, they take those ideas lightly in general about life. Like, man, this movie does sort of have a cool critique to convict you to at least be sober-minded and not quite so judgmental in the way you think about it. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I would say to kind of wrap up that there are not a lot of movies that I would say you'd probably need or are worth watching yearly. if not more often. And I believe that Cabin in the Woods, at least for us, is one that Halloween or that Halloween, you know, fall time is a great time for us to revisit it every year. And it doesn't do anything but really get better when we watch it. We enjoy it. You know, the humor is subtle and has enough commentary to it that it's always engaging, even though, you know, we've seen it half a dozen times.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for something basically like, you know, what Laura and James have already said, that it's more open to a larger group of friends than like, hey, does everyone want to sit down and watch like something that's going to give them nightmares? This kind of strikes that perfect balance. It'd be like my Halloween go-to movie.
Yeah.
Besides Zombieland. Yeah. and we might, when we talk about movies that we're going to do for next Halloween, there's one or two that kind of jump up, and Zombieland's on that list. But I would say besides like the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown or whatever, that this is the movie that I would probably watch at, you know, at Halloween, but with all those conditions that, you know, everything isn't for everybody.
Yeah.
But I think as far as horror movies go, this does as best as any movie I've ever seen to be everything for everybody or as accessible as possible. So highly recommend it. It's I don't know, I really enjoy it. I own mm-hmm. it. I need to watch the commentary, but
and if you're not quite sold, you just put it like this. If you're not quite sold, just think of it this way. If you love the Avengers and you're willing to try something just a little darker, it even has, it even has Thor. I mean, that's right. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
And a similar wit and sensibility, to be extremely honest, right? I mean, like
exactly.
That,
yeah.
Like you can enjoy a different genre, but it's still being made by some of those folks that are making the mainstream stuff we enjoy, so it's not going to corrupt your soul.
We don't think.
Yeah,
I guess anything's possible.
Yeah, asterisk, soul corrupting, not guaranteed.
don't hold us accountable.
Yeah.
Non-corruption limited in your area. God, that whole like Chris Hemsworth as Thor thing, like when he throws that football outside the window and that dude just happens to catch it, that's like just the most ridiculous thing. But like, it totally works because of the kind of movie it is. So,
thanks, guys. So,
yeah, I would say it's been great. James, I wanted to give you a chance real quick before you have to go to let people know how they can follow you on the interwebs and, you know, at anything that you happen to be doing, like Cinemagogue, for example.
Yes. Well, you can actually find me at cinemagogue.com, or if, like everyone in the universe, you don't know how to spell that, go to filmandtheology.com. That'll actually take you there as well.
So nice. Just
filmandtheology.com, take you right there. And there's reviews, there's videos. I also have had the pleasure of being able to go to movie-hosted events and speak about the themes, even do 2-3-day seminars. Lots of information there about what I've done that. And, of course, since you don't need to pay thousands and thousands and millions of dollars to bring me all the way across the country to your corner of the world, there's also a cheap little book that kind of walks people through some basics of storytelling, multiple genres, and how we can see the gospel in those. And that's available at cinemagogue.com. It's conveniently titled Cinemagogue.
Cinemagogue.
Oh, it has a subtitle that's so insanely long just because I'm pretentious. I don't even know what my own subtitle is. It's Reclaiming Myth and Meta for something. And, no, I'm just kidding. It's Reclaiming Entertainment. Gag,
but, yeah.
Say Reclaiming Entertainment. Reclaiming Entertainment and Navigating Narrative for the Myths and Mirrors They Were Meant to Be. That's
wow,
that is...
what? There's a lot of alliteration going on in there, too.
I love alliteration so much.
Well, that's awesome. And like I said, I do highly recommend if anyone... Obviously, if you're listening to this episode, that you're probably really into looking at films from a more theological perspective, looking at the themes, the narratives, and the structures of the stories. James is an excellent resource for that. But Laura, how can we follow you on the interwebs and or, I don't know, in real life? Like, what's the best place to, like, get a van and follow you around at?
Nice.
Please don't do that, because then you'll see how much I'm sitting at home. You can go to my website, laurafissel.com, or follow me on Twitter, @Laura_Fissel. I'm pretty excited about my website because I'm starting to do some writing there that... And blogging intimidates me because I feel like I really have to say something profound. So I've been using my actual website as a place to post like book reviews or things that inspire me as an artist. And so I'm excited about things I'm posting over there.
LauraFissel.com.
Uh-huh.
Cool.
Not Laura at Fissel. LauraFissel.com.
Sorry, I'm thinking Twitter. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. just LauraFissel.com.
LauraFissel.com.
Yes. You can hire me to copy edit or, you know, do creative prayer for you. Millions of ways for you to pay me money.
You're so versatile. What if someone pays you to watch The Ring again?
If somebody paid me, I might watch The Ring. I've never watched The Ring.
Oh, really? I thought you...
Nope,
okay.
Never seen it.
All right. Or The Conjuring. Pay you to watch The Conjuring again?
I would watch The Conjuring again for money.
Okay. Well, you can follow me at Fizzification on Twitter, or you can follow the show to see the latest like articles and... reviews that we have at Real World Theo. Follow us on Twitter. Eric, you can follow if you'd like to know more about the show, then visit our website, realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L worldtheology.com. James already has the best website, filmandtheology.com, redirecting to his site, so he wins. Not that we're competing, but he's winning, so it doesn't matter.
I'm like Charlie Sheen.
It's winning. Connect with us on Facebook, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, review the show. If you enjoy it, tell people about it. Let's get more people involved in the conversation. We, like I said, follow our Twitter feeds. We'll respond to your comments about the episodes. We'll have a conversation on the website. Do all that. I just want to thank James for taking the time to be here. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura, for taking the time to be on the show.
Sure thing.
And thank you, listeners, for taking the time to make us part of your week. Until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Happy Halloween.
And something is under your bed.
Definitely. Definitely under your bed.
Right now.
Check.
Yeah. Go alone in a dark room. Don't even turn the lights on.
Yeah. Don't do that. Just go. All right.
Bye-bye. All right. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com.